Ozil, Lacazette, Ozil! Arsenal are walking in a winter wonderland! What a turnaround! He's come up with it! The scorpion touch! Olivier Giroud! When you saw Mkhitaryan do it, you say we'd never see it again!
Hi, and welcome to the Cannon Crested Arsenal podcast. We're recording this just after the game. Chelsea just beat Spurs. It was a really good game, and United lost to Watford as well. And we drew away at Everton. Our first clean sheet in a very long time, so I guess that's where we are now. So welcome. I hope you're having a great day wherever you are. I hope you're enjoying the Christmas and end of year celebrations wherever you are. It's a cheerful time. And irrespective of what we're seeing on the pitch, it's a time that you should actually strive to find joy, whatever you do. Arsenal is not big enough to make you feel sad during this period, I think. I'm not recording this podcast alone. I have Damola at Mastermind 1808 with me. Hi, Damola. How are you? Are you in Christmas spirits already?
No, not yet. I'm going to work tomorrow. I don't know what you're talking about.
Actually, you know, for me, right, one of the best periods too, I never take a vacation during Christmas. Like, I always take my vacations in November because being at work in December is like the most exciting time. Nobody wants to work. All the projects are pretty much shut down. All your vendors have closed. All your consultants have closed. So you're pretty much just sitting down there, faffing, eating all the chocolates, taking all the hampers. Nobody's asking you for anything. If you've not met your... Okay, fortunately, I didn't work in like in a retail team or something, but it was really a good time to be... All your bosses have gone on vacation. You're just fasting, really. But not in my present occupation, though, but so last year, for the last 9 years, that's how my life was, yeah.
I'm pretty sure that what you do currently has no regard for Christmas, does it?
Oh, I'm going to be at work on Christmas Day, like, this year,
but... But me too, see, in the same vein, I never go on. I mean, apart from this year, I didn't have a choice because I couldn't go on leave all year. So I was on leave earlier in the month of December. But typically, no, I don't go on leave in December. First things first, yeah. Because half of the companies, more than half the companies have closed. So first things first, there's no traffic. So you get to work in 20 minutes, all your customers are closed for the year. Or if you've not met your sales target, you're not going to meet it in December. So you might as well freestyle. So yes, yeah. December to go to work in Lagos.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So that's a good part. Can we even say it's the sad part? Because it's a new start for Arsenal. It's like we've restarted this season like three times. We started with Unai, we started with Ljungberg, and now we're starting with Arteta again. It's like we're getting born again and backsliding, going back into sin, and we've gotten the third opportunity to start again.
Back Emery and used Ljungberg as interim manager. Nobody forgave you, man. You were still living in sin because Emery is not. There's no salvation to be found from Unai, from Freddy Ljungberg. So as far as I'm concerned, this is the first start. That Ljungberg period was us living in sin. We're confessing our sins to a bad priest, so it doesn't count.
Oh, really? I actually think the club were expecting that Ljungberg will have some new manager bounce, and then he would see us till the end of the season. I don't think they were ready to really appoint anybody now. I think they were hoping that some new manager bounce will come under Ljungberg to give them time, but they saw nothing was changing, and then they were forced to act, which was not helped by the fact that Ljungberg himself kept making a mountain out of it, saying he needs staff, and they were not going to commit to any staff on a temporary basis, which would be more money, so they had to just go to this. If you see the way they're trying to recruit Arteta now, right, and then he doesn't have his staff yet, it shows you that it wasn't a decision that was actually reached a long time ago, like maybe 3 weeks ago when or 4 weeks ago when Ljungberg got the job.
I'm almost sure that they didn't plan to, they didn't really plan to hire anybody after Ljungberg. They were hoping that they could stick with Ljungberg to the end of the season.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm of the opinion that even, I feel like 2 weeks up until they sacked Emery, they still weren't planning to sack Emery. They were still hoping around Hilton. And I think at some point it just became really untenable.
Exactly.
So it's very, in a way, because I don't believe in Ljungberg at all, I'm very happy that we didn't get that funny new manager bounce that people seem to get. Mm. New manager bounce is why United is in the condition that they are currently, because some fraud comes, perform some miracle over some 8 games, and then you convince yourself that, and then he sort of forces you to make a decision. Are you going to give me this thing long term or not? And then you make the decision of, I mean, you can't kick out the performing manager. Actually, not where is a fan favorite like Ljungberg is, or like Solskjaer also is. So I feel like he forced their hand, and now they're stuck with it for the foreseeable future. Not like I'm complaining about that at all. I'm very happy to have that happen to them.
it's somewhat complicated as well, because Ljungberg was assistant to Unai Emery, and he was recently promoted into that position. Arteta is coming in now. He wants to bring his own people. The club can't step Ljungberg back to the academy, and I'm sure there's discussions around when he's going to be sitting next to Arteta, but in what capacity? Is he going to be like assistant to Arteta, or Arteta wants his own personal assistant, and then Ljungberg becomes what? Is it like a demotion to? So it's somewhat unstructured the way it's going to turn out, and I'm just waiting for to see how all this plays out.
It depends on. I feel like Arsenal still run that model where you come in and you come with a bit of your own baggage, meaning that you come in and you come in with your own assistants. You come in with your a couple of first team coaches. You come in with your goalkeeping coach. You come in with So if Arteta is going to be bringing on all of that, then Ljungberg will have to take whatever role is offered to him, or
like the Steve Bould role for Unai Emery last year.
Yeah, you have to take whatever it is that is offered to you. There isn't really much that you can do about it. I mean, it's a new guy. He owes you new. So, and the thing is, I hope that they don't pressure Arteta into. I've been hearing that talks are scheduled between Ljungberg and Arteta. If you don't like him, you don't like him. There should be no sentiment. Football is a business. If you really don't think that he can do a good enough job, then there's no need adding to your coaching staff. I mean, that whole Arsenal DNA thing, as you people have seen, doesn't really work. There's no such thing. So if he has to be demoted, if he cannot take it, then he should go. I'm hearing that Malmo or some funny club from some funny place is interested in him. He should go and... Or, I mean, can't he go back to being a model? I mean, there's that, right?
You can go out. Really? No, I think you're really unfair to Ljungberg. He really did a great job with under-23. And it's the product of his work that we are seeing in people like in Saka, we are seeing in Nelson, we are seeing in Emil Smith Rowe, we are seeing in those three primarily. Well, even in TJJ, for instance, or in Olainka, people, he did great work with the under 23. So he himself knew he wasn't ready for this role, and that's why he kept saying. Early when he got the job, saying, I'm helping the club. He was very aware that he wasn't ready for the role. So judging him based on what we have seen now will be pretty, pretty harsh. Or at least making an overall decision on how he can, whether he can be a good coach or not. I think the terms of reference to judge that will be what he did with the under-23s rather than what he did with this very, very tumultuous squad.
I think it's very hard to judge anybody based on what they do with the under-23s, because first of all, you're only as good as the opponents you play, right? Like what I mean is that if I'm an average manager, right? But because, I mean, I don't know how many good coaches there are coaching at under-23 level. What if I'm an average manager, but I just happen to be the best of the lot in the under-23 league? So, I mean, my players go on the pitch. look better than everybody else because they're I'm average, but I'm better than their own managers. Does that really say a lot about how much I average to take this step up? Again, I don't know. Well, I don't know. I'm being overly harsh.
Yeah, I think so.
I think, as I said to somebody earlier today, I think I'm just racist. I just don't believe that there's any good manager in Sweden waiting to come and save the day. I'm very sorry. I think that if you don't have a footballing background, I mean, there's a reason that there are not a lot of... Why do you think there are not a lot of successful black coaches? You don't go to academies...
No, we're not going down this route. No, we're not. Especially because we just watched the game where racism was a subject in Tottenham sports. We're not going down this. I think maybe we should even go there. I think it's you're ignoring the fact that there are institutions that have been built in a certain way to support a certain kind of talent, to help that certain type of talent to excel. So it's easier to go into that route. If you want to change that institution, you have to make a conscious effort to find people that are of not of that certain type that institution has been working in favor of for a very long. That's why you see diversity in organizations, right? It's not because I want a few black faces in my company. I want a few brown people in my company. So I just go and hire three or four people. So when people say that it's like you're cheating like the white guy, no, you're not. The thing is, people from this particular race have for a very long period benefited from a system, and now you're using that system to identify talents that are in another section that you can help, and that's the way I see it.
Simon, but you know the thing.
It's like black coaches, like, right?
Okay. Can I say something? I think the problem.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I think the problem is that people only play the racism card when you are splitting an argument that doesn't favor their own race, especially women, we feel like we're the oppressed, we black people. Let me give you an example, right? You know, nobody
How
ever
are we going into a racism conversation in an Arsenal podcast?
Let me go back to my little back to my football or back to sports. You know, nobody ever complains that all of the long distance races are won by the Kenyans or the Ethiopians, right? There's a reason why they win it, right? Maybe it's culture, maybe it's their terrain, maybe there's a reason why they win it.
But the color is the reason is not the color of their skin. The reason is because they come from a place where it's more suited to. So if you want to be like, if you want to win that race, pretty much go there.
The reason why there are not a lot of a whole lot of excelling black coaches is because football isn't one of the things that we are encouraged to learn when we are younger. It's just the truth. You don't have a guy that it's the same thing for. If you look at the difference between black and South American players and then their European counterparts, the guys from Spain, the guys from Belgium, the guys from Spain might initially be less talented, right? But because they go to academies, they learn this thing from age 8, they breathe football, they learn how to walk, they learn how to eat. Unlike the South American guy that was in, I'm saying that the reason why Neymar, the difference between Neymar and Messi at this time was because Neymar was in Santos till he was almost 20. And Messi left for Spain at age 9. So Messi has South American talent and he has a Spanish upbringing. It's the reason why he's as complete as he is currently. Neymar has that playful, let's just fool around the gallery, and it's been hard to beat out of him. But please, Simon, let's focus on Arsenal. That's matter for when you and I.
Wait. That analogy doesn't work to me because you say Messi has the South American skill set, right? And then he has the European work. What did you say?
He has European tutelage. He was in an academy before he was 10. Yes.
So where is he using that skill set? He's using that skill set in Europe.
Yes.
So it doesn't work. If he has that, why wouldn't a European go into the Brazilian league and then ball there? Why wouldn't you go there and then ball? So if he's using a skill set that he learned in an environment and it's working for him, it makes the point that the institution recognizes that kind of, or that encourages that kind of skill, or facilitates that kind of skill set to thrive.
Are you saying that why won't an adult European player make it in Brazil, right?
Yeah, why don't they go there and ball?
First of all, they will not go there. Nobody can pay them. One, I mean, yeah, nobody's going to. Why would you go there? I mean, the question is, why would you even go
there? True.
Yeah.
I get your point, but let's just go back to Arsenal, really. We're 14 minutes into this conversation already. okay. Let's go back. What did I have on my program notes? Actually, I tweeted yesterday after the game that I had absolutely nothing on my program notes. Maybe that's why we've gone into this 14 minutes of a long conversation on absolute nothing. So basically, on my notes, I had lineup, which is really, really interesting. I had David Luiz, 22 minutes. I can't remember why I wrote that down, but I think he did something obnoxious. What did you say?
Because the game was so boring, you had nothing else to write.
Absolutely. Okay, now I remember why I wrote it down. It was on the left side. It was something that happened around the left, close to the touchline, right? He pretty much just fell into a player. I don't know what he was thinking. He just did that. So I just wrote that down. But that David Luiz is part of his game. Then I wrote 44 minutes, Martinelli. He had his first shot on Arsenal's first shot, right? It wasn't even on target. It went to the side, apparently. Then I wrote down 58 minutes. We had a shot on target. Aubameyang, from a corner kick, I think. He didn't even really shoot it well. He just hit his shin or something. His shin and the keeper saved it or something. Then I had Willock for ESR substitution, 66 minutes. Aubameyang for Lacazette, 78 minutes. I can't remember if we made a third substitution. I don't have that down. Did we? I don't know. But basically, the game to me was, the game had this feel of, you know how you're playing in the World Cup and then it's a third game in the World Cup and it's against Saudi Arabia versus San Marino and they both know that they're out. They just want to complete this thing and go and have a bath, basically. So that's how the game had that feel to me.
I mean, two managers with nothing to play for. They had lost their interim jobs already. Duncan Ferguson versus Lundberg. See, that lineup was I'm like, why are you going to play so many young kids at the same time? I'm all up for playing young kids, but I'm like, I need to, I've not seen anything from Nelson this season to justify him benching Pepe. Not when your only win since October was basically, in fact, Sam, how many games have we won in the last 2 months?
I think it's just that, West Ham, right?
That Victoria Gumarish or something that we won 3-2, right?
West Ham as well.
Yeah. So that game so Victoria Gumarish and I don't even know if I'm getting that name right. And West Ham. Notice how Pepe was very influential in those two games. Scored both goals, the second and third goals against Victoria Gumarish. Then assist and go versus West Ham. Shouldn't that tell somewhere that, you know, if this is going to work, it feels like Pepe is going to be important to the cause. So why Lundberg... See, it's not even upsetting that he didn't start him. The fact that he did not bring him on at any point, I'm thinking, are you resting him for Wednesday or Thursday, whatever Boxing days. To be honest, I feel like you can only try to rationalize what a smart person does, right? And Lundberg doesn't come across to me as a very smart manager. So
you should. We can't say that kind of thing, really. But see, honestly, I think I agree with you on the lineup. Before the game, I tweeted that it was like an Arsenal Academy Got Talent kind of lineup, really.
Exactly.
But I didn't understand it. And especially, I wrote that down as well. As like Pepe wasn't starting as well. Socrates wasn't in the whole squad. It was Mavropanos that was on the bench. And Pepe didn't start. I think those were the two big decisions. The one that most people had issues with, which you have also highlighted, was the Reece Nelson playing. I don't think we can say Reece Nelson benched Pepe. from a standpoint that he was better than him. I think the same message that he was trying to pass across with the Emile Smith Rowe thing, where he said even if Ozil was available, he would have played Emile Smith Rowe, is what he did with the Reece Nelson and Pepe Thien as well. Makes absolutely no sense to me. I'm not justifying it. I'm just saying that's what I think he did. He was really conscious of the fact that it was is possibly his last game as Arsenal manager, and his persona at the club was he was a youth team manager, and if he was going to sign out, he was going to sign out playing that youth team. Because if you look at it, Martinelli obviously was going to start. He's always wanted to start Martinelli. He already made it known that he doesn't like playing Aubameyang and Lacazette together, and it showed in the substitution that he made because he doesn't think that they work well together. So it was really clear. And if you listen to him, if you let me just round up. If you listen to him against when he had his first game against Norwich, he was really clear there as well that. He dropped Reece Nelson. He said it at the presser that he dropped Reece Nelson as a very skillful player, and I felt bad that I left him at home as well. So you could see that it was something that he did because of himself, and he wanted to say, I don't know how much of a message he wanted to send to Arteta, saying that these are the young boys that are at the second level that you might want to have to work with. So before I go, I will give you an opportunity to see how these players are. I think that's why he didn't sub Reece Nelson as well, because he wanted Arteta to see.
If that was his point yesterday, then he did them all a disservice. Because
Well,
I don't think anybody saw anything that game to suggest that he should try Emile Smith Rowe or Reece Nelson again anytime soon, to be honest. I don't think so.
but even at that is the message. That is the message. So the message could also be that these boys are not ready. So you need to go and get people that can supplement your first team and make them ready. Even if that is the message that came out of it, then especially because we kept a clean sheet in the end, then I think to an extent it was worth it. I'm not trying to justify the decision. I'm just saying that that's the thinking that he had when that's the thinking that I think he had when he picked that lineup. Yeah, that's the way I see it.
This is how I think he rationalized it. Okay, so there's a good chance that I don't get to sit down in the dugout with Ateta. Maybe if they offer me a job, maybe they'll offer me a job again at under 23 level. Okay, let me score some key points with my guys. Let me play as many of them as I possibly can. Bring God. I mean, notice how his sub was Willock and not okay. Well, Willock is no longer in that under 23 side. Easy. Does he still play for them?
No,
Does
no,
he
no,
still play
no,
for
no,
them?
no, no, no,
That's
it
it.
doesn't.
It was Willock and not Guendouzi. So there's no Simon. Let's not. I mean, talking about racism was a better in football was a better spend of our time than why Lundberg yesterday. There's no. I don't see the common seat. If you had started them, then at some point in time took them up and brought in Pepe and who else? And how do you expect me to respect a coach that takes off our top scorer in the nil-nil game? How? How?
See, this is the point. I'm not. This is the point. I'm trying to play devil's advocate here. You're trying to look at that lineup from or the lineup and everything he did in that game from a point of talent. I think he wasn't trying to do that. I think what he was trying to do was to send a message, and that's what he was trying to do. The substitutions. See, Guendouzi is not. So Guendouzi is a player that is. I tweeted as well during the game that Pepe is 24. So if he was something about playing young players, he would have brought in Pepe into the game. But Pepe is established. Guendouzi is established in Arsenal at least.
Do
He
we
is he's
have
established. So he wasn't. He was. He wasn't. He was. His decision not to bring them in was because he wanted to make a conscious statement about the level, the quality of young talent that's available at the club. That's the way I see what he did.
Simon, if you open most web pages, right, that only show that don't show the full table. You know we are not on table on page one, we are on page two. right?
I saw it today for the first time in a long while. I don't look at the league table actually.
Looking at points to forgetting points and then using our proper league game to showcase what the young players can do. Simon, forget about whatever Lundberg did yesterday. There's a reason why he's going to Malmo or he's going to be under 23 manager or something. But
yeah,
I fully expect him not to be part of Arteta's coaching staff. At least not the guys that you will see on
you've made me look at the league table. I'm looking at the league table for the first time in months. Honestly, I make conscious effort to stay away from it. We played. We played 18 games. We have won 5. We have drawn 8, and we have lost 5. Wow. Okay, Wolves have drawn. Are we resetting the record for number of games drawn here? Wolves have drawn 9 games, but they have 27 points, and we have 23 because they have lost just 3, and we have lost 5. Wow.
How can you have lost 5 by December?
We have drawn 8 games.
Drawn 8. That's
okay. Let me do a quick Google search here. Hold on a second. Most draws in a football season. Hold on a second. Most draws in a football season that has 38 games. I think it's 17. Newcastle in 2003-2004 had 14. Aston Villa in 06-07 and 11-12 had 14. Sunderland in 2014-2015 had 14 as well. We already have 8. We might equal that record at this rate.
I doubt it, though. I doubt it.
Okay.
I doubt it.
Arteta in. So that's pretty much it. Do you have anything to talk about the game? Any thoughts on the game, actually? Talk about the midfield. I think Xhaka and Torreira were pretty solid yesterday.
You see, the thing is, I don't want to look at that yesterday's game in the context of anything. It was just very. I agree with you. And the thing is, I don't know if you know that. I agree that I think I mentioned in the last podcast that Xhaka has his flaws. He's always prone to that 3 seconds where you do not concentrate. But I still feel like in any attack, in any lineup that we have currently, with the players we currently have at our disposal, Xhaka should start every important game. No joke.
Yeah.
He has. But when it comes to progressing the ball upfield, he's our best passer of the ball from midfield. And if you want to be a progressive team like we claim to be, you have to have a guy from midfield that can pass the ball. So, yes, I think that I like Guendouzi as a person, football-wise, he's disappointed me a lot of late. But that's because I just think that Emery wasn't coaching anything into him. I feel like when you're that young, you need to be instructed. You should not be having the ball here. You should have been ahead of the ball here. You should be showing for the pass. I feel like, but in terms of our best midfield, that was the central midfield. I think that was it yesterday. Xhaka Torreira. I think they complement each other well. Yes.
How about the defense? Chambers. So if you're going to pick a defense, Chambers, Socrates, and Luiz, would yesterday's be the way to go? Who's worse between Socrates and Chambers was clearly man of the match actually. So who's worse with Socrates and David Luiz?
You see, the thing is that Simon, you know that in university, right? If you fail a course, they ask you what mark you scored when you failed. You go F9. Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
14. Yeah, those two are. But the thing is that because I've held my opinion about David Luiz, I know I've held it that he's a terrible defender for at least 10 years. So I'm biased. I'd still rather watch Socrates than watch Luiz. Luiz is too prone to. But that's why I keep saying that experience in football is hard overrated. Because some of the mistakes, like look at that thing you said David Luiz did in the 22nd minute of that game. Why did you do it?
I don't get it.
Now for like 15 years, I still think that's a smart thing to do. I never really understand how, and the thing is, do you think any manager has ever asked David Luiz that, sorry, you did this? Can you explain why you did this? Like, I feel like if I was a manager and you know, you want me to make an in-game error, and that's going to do something that is absolutely out and out stupid. I feel like after when we're having our pre-game, post-game meeting, I'll put that thing on a TV, a big screen in the room, and ask you in front of everybody else why you did it. That, bro, can you please explain your train of thought when you were doing this? Can you explain it and help me understand it? Because, I mean, you let these guys down. This was your error. You let these guys down. So can you explain why you did it? Maybe they'll stop doing it. But 15 years of football and Socrates and Luiz still make the dumbest of errors. But I mean, yeah, but it depends. I feel like if Arteta insists from playing us from the back, which I expect that he will, I feel like Luiz might be the better option than Socrates, because Socrates on the ball, when playing us from the back, it looks like you are telling him to, I don't know, to play with a live grenade. He's just so uncomfortable.
His Peter check.
Yeah, he doesn't want it. He's not interested. I think he just wants to clear the ball and then bully people. That's all Socrates really wants to do in the game of football. Just, you know, stand on your head and do that. I mean, it's Greek, right? So that whole, I'm a Spartacus, I'm a Greek god. Nah, you should bin all of them. I didn't want Luiz this year. I didn't want Socrates 2 years ago. And I mean, it's been proven right. Both of them are. They should be. I hope they are gone this summer. There's no point. I'd rather have holding.
They have 1 year.
I thought we're said we're no longer let people go for free again. So let's sell both of them this summer. Even if it's 2 or 3 million, doesn't matter. I'd rather have a
Saliba.
I'd rather have a 21-year-old exactly that I don't know his ceiling, than have a washed up David Luiz or Socrates. It's not worth it. There are no upsides to it.
So on just to close on the game, because there's absolutely nothing to talk about there. Why do you think? Because when I watched the Man City Leicester yesterday, right? I've watched Chelsea play Tottenham, right? Why do you think there's this stodginess? Like, there is nothing. Our transitions are slow. They don't have zip. I don't know how to explain it. But you know how you play football with zip, the way City play, even Leicester play. There's this. I'm describing with my hands, which is a terrible thing to do on a podcast, but there's this zip that the football has, and we don't have it. We've not had it for like this season, at least to the best of my knowledge.
We didn't have it last season either.
We didn't have it last season. We had it against Leicester. Exactly. So if you think of the game we played against Leicester the last time Mesut Ozil completely dominated the game, that one. If we think of a game like that, then why don't we have it?
So the thing is that I feel like no jokes, right? I feel like over the past, at least since Wenger left, I feel like we're probably the most poorly structured team in the English Premier League. No jokes. I don't feel like since Wenger left, right? I don't think we've had a clear idea of how we want to play the ball from the back to the front. Like, I feel like they just Emery just tells them, play that from the back. That's really it. Nothing like, okay, so if we play that from the back, where how high up do our fullbacks have to be? Does our central midfielder drop it as the third man into an almost defensive position? All those, I don't think they've ever. That's why when we play from the back, that's why it looks so bad. I was watching Wolves versus Spurs last week, and they play from the back far better than we do, because you can tell that they're not just saying kick it to each other till you go upfield. It's a function of everybody should know where they are in the defensive phase. Everybody should know where they are in the attacking phase. I've heard coaches say, I instruct my team that if the right fullback is overlapping, the left fullback should hang back a bit so that even if we lose the ball, at least we still have a three-man defense. I don't think that we went into any of those kinds of details in the last 2 years. You can't have zip when people do not even know where on the football pitch they're supposed to be standing at any point in time. Do you understand? Does that make any sense?
But Arteta said it in his presser as well, when he said that football is supposed to be instinctive. So over time, I know that what makes you have zip is the fact that I trust that if I'm making this run, the person beside me is also making that run, and I'm going to try to put it there so I find him. But because we change how we play so often, and we change the players who play those systems so often, there's nothing instinctive. So because there's nothing instinctive, we just go with those safe passes, and that's the way we struggle. That's the way I see it.
I agree with you. It's because as a team, there was no structure whatsoever. Nobody's saying, when you are here, I should be here. You should be making this kind of run so that I can enter this space, so that this place vacate. If you ever read, I was reading this article by these German coaches, like not even the popular ones. It was some German assistant coaches. When they go into the amount of detail they pass on to the players on a day-to-day basis, you see, let me say this right here, right now. The reason why, you know, I'll mention you on this tweet when we are done with the podcast. The day Arsene Wenger left, somebody asked me on WhatsApp who I wanted as Arsenal coach, and I said Mikel Arteta. And he's like, what? How? No, I'm like, if this team needs anything, this team just needs to be coached to start with. They first need somebody that will coach them. Like, tell them that, okay, this is how we're going to do it. When you are here, I'll be here. He will make this run. You will come to the middle. You will pull out wide. When we lose the ball, you would, when I tell people that there's more than one form of gegenpressing, they're like, what am I talking about? I'm like, There's the one where you aggressively press the player. And there's the one where you just aggressively press the passing lanes. So you're not marking any players. You're not making the guy on the ball have no options.
But
I don't think that our players have been coached to that level in the past 2.5 years. I'm being very lenient on Wenger because, I mean, the man is old. Let him just enjoy his retirement in peace. I don't think that if I wanted anything, I wanted a proper football coach. I didn't want my management to come secondary. I mean, all of that and all that. Let us first remind them the basics of playing football. I think that Arsenal as a team, we have no idea how we want to get the ball forward. We have no idea how we want to win the ball back. We have no idea what to do when we are being counter-attacked. Like, for example, that thing they say about tactical fouling. Why don't we do it? Why don't we do it? I feel like it's one of those things that the players remind. You look behind you, it's a 3-on-3. No point in trying to mark the space. If you're not on the yellow, take the yellow. If you're not on the, and we are not, it's not a game that we've won already. Take the yellow, no problem. I mean, let's regroup. I don't think we ever think, because in Manchester City, for example, it doesn't matter if that player is a defender or a midfielder or a striker or the mascot. If he sees that we have a numerical advantage and this guy is breaking into a dangerous position, he fouls him. It doesn't matter which player it is on the pitch. I don't think our players are honestly, I think that what they do is in our training is that all those cones, they just put them on the pitch, they run through them, they shoot at Leno and Martinez, and they all go. No, no jokes.
That's very harsh. That's very harsh. Again. Okay, go on.
Or even like, I think one of the biggest things that killed Emery was whatever reason why he stopped pressing. Like, he came the first couple of games, the pressing was really aggressive, and then he doesn't just go to not pressing, he just abandoned it entirely. And I'm like, why? Like, maybe if you say you don't want to press like a Manchester City or a team that is very, very good on the counter, I understand. Like, I don't think anybody should press against them, Manchester United. They're a counter-attacking team. They just want to. All social praise for on a game-to-game basis is Father God, please
let us have counter attacking chances today so that we can score. If you don't give them Marshall to Rashford, and that's why they can give Manchester City the amount of trouble they gave them 2 weeks ago. But I'm thinking, in our own case, we have no, why don't we press? How can we be playing a team like Sheffield United? Okay, no, I think Sheffield is good on the ball. A team like, I need some random team, Watford. Why are you not pressing Kabasili? Why are you not pressing, I don't know, all this? What? Because when you give people time on the ball, then you people have space to make passes. Mm. And no, you shouldn't do that. Like, I feel like what Aston Villa needs above anything else right now is better coaching. And that is why I'm very much behind the Mikel Arteta signing. Let us first remind people, have an identity, let everybody know what they're supposed to be doing in football at every point in time. Then we'll see where we go from there.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And Arteta, it seems really, if you listen to him, he seems really clear about what he wants to do as well. And if you listen to, I'm sure you haven't watched it, but Raul and Edu's conversation on the .com about the process for hiring Mikel Arteta, have you watched it?
Those people hired Una Emery. Why will I listen to anything?
I'm sure you haven't watched it. But okay, so if anybody who hasn't watched it, just go and watch it. It's about 17 minutes long, heavily dominated by Raul. I think Raul has a very domineering personality. The interview started right, and then the guy who was interviewing, who we never saw, said, he asked the question and said, so how did this process start? And then Raul starts the conversation and answers, and then he goes, this whole thing was led by Edu. Edu recruited, did the whole strategy, recruited, found the person, met Arteta. So this was Raul talking on behalf of Edu, right? It was a 17-minute interview, and I can swear Raul spoke for 13 minutes out of it. At some point, the guy interviewing had to ask Edu personally, Edu, what are your thoughts? So Raul was always making reference to Edu, right? And then Edu was hardly getting any word in. And then when Edu... So you know how when you have a conversation with someone, right? And then Raul makes a point. And then the guy interviewing then says, oh, Edu, so what do you think about this? And then Edu makes his point for like 1.5 minutes. Let Edu's response end the conversation. But Raul, my guy, no. He says, I want to add a word on that. And he takes it up from Edu again. He has a very domineering personality.
Do you know how much bad PR Raul has gotten over the past couple of months? I mean, yeah. all the good, letting this guy go. Mm. I've forgotten this guy. Sven. Letting him go. Letting the good work he did in our transfer window. Signing David Luiz was not it at all. Atola. Mm. Simon, let me ask you a question. Do you think that when we sold Iwobi on transfer deadline day this year, do you think it was part of the plan? Do you think it was part of the plan all along? Do you think so?
Hello?
Can you hear me? Hello?
No. Iwobi was a financial decision. It was a balance the books decision, obviously.
So
it was a balance of books decision.
It was sort of part of the plan, like, okay, we spent so much money, so we need to recoup some part of it.
Exactly. It was a balance the book. It was a balance the book decision. There was no, I don't think Unai Emery would have sanctioned it will be sale. That's my personal opinion.
But you know, I think that with the way that football is going with all of this, you do the coaching, let us worry about the team. I feel like the coach doesn't get the final say on who gets kept and who gets sold.
Well, Raul said it a lot of times that Unai had input into who was coming, that it was a joint decision between the three of them. And it was a variance in that decision that made Sven leave at some point.
Okay, yeah. I, because if you think of the fact that he let Sven go, he signed David Luiz, he was instrumental in signing, in hiring Unai Emery. He waited 3 weeks before giving us a replacement manager. I mean, maybe he's just looking for all the good PR that he can get. He's just trying to tap into the Arteta love as much as he can, because, you know, let's be honest, his job should be on the line very soon if you keep up with this trend of what we've been doing.
Well, he'd make sure that if Arteta doesn't work, he's not him, because he pretty much... You need to watch that interview, actually. Just, I know you wouldn't, but just go watch it and then tell me what you think. Because the number of times he called Edu's name in that interview without letting the man speak, then he goes, Edu and Arteta have a great relationship. If Edu and Arteta have a great relationship, he said they have a great relationship, they have a great connection more than three times, then let the man who has the relationship with the guy speak. Anybody listening to this, just go watch it and tell me what you think, actually. Maybe I'm the one who's reading too much into it. Yeah.
Reading your tweets, yeah, I feel like you have more... You have a lot more patience than I do. You know, I stopped watching Arsenal-related videos. Like, anybody in the Arsenal hierarchy speaking for at least 8 years. I'm not joking. Wenger's post-match and pre-match is to annoy me. You see nothing. He'll just go there and say absolutely nothing.
The pod has ended now.
What did you ever get any information from all the things that Wenger used to say? No, it's like listening to. Listening to Gazidis. Let's just come and say we want to be Bayern in the next couple of years. It's all mouth. No, we just hear back, no bites. I got fed up with all of the, because it gives you hope that these people know what they're doing, and then they just come and they deliver absolutely nothing. So in fact, the first Arsenal staff that I would listen to in a long time was 3 days ago when I was in traffic and I was listening to Mikel Arteta. Because that's somebody who I believe is going to say something that I want to hear. Not all these Gazidis and Edu that are just, here to make themselves...
Anybody who's listening to this, completely ignore everything he's saying. It gives you an insight into the personality of people that actually run this club. It lets you know, it's not a lot of times that you get a feel. Like, you could listen to Gazidis and you know he wasn't telling the truth. You know that because you actually listen to him. So if you don't listen to someone, how can you judge the person? There are very few opportunities that you have to actually listen to people that run the club. And Arsenal is one of those few clubs where you hear the people that run the club actually speak. So Raul speaks to everybody at the start of the year. Raul goes to the Raul and Edu had the conversation with the fans. They've had this video now. You've had three opportunities or four opportunities to marry club strategy with club execution. If you fail as a fan to consume that kind of content, and then you start coming on Twitter or on social media and making decisions based on something that you have not joined strategy. So if somebody says the club's ambition now is to build youth, and you've not listened to the strategy, the guy best in charge of strategy say we're going to go with youth, and then the manager is playing youth, then you come with a very filtered opinion, because you haven't consumed the content that should have given you context to what you're seeing. That's the point I'm trying to make.
I can read some genius like you will always do an article on the club strategy, and you will summarize what they said in an article. I'll read it. I don't mind reading it. It's listening to them say that nonsense that half the time is just not backed up. They just say what you want to hear that upsets me. I feel like I'm sure he has good plans. The reason why I didn't listen to anything Emery said was because I stopped believing Emery a long time ago, even before we hired him. The moment Emery I lost faith in Emery as a football manager the day he lost that 4-0 lead to Barcelona. I'm like, you can lose 6-1 as a manager. It happens. It absolutely happens. But losing 6-1 when you knew that all you had to do was not lose 6-1. Nah, you don't deserve my respect. You have one job. Preserve a 4-0 lead, and you found a way to... Nah, you're not somebody I can research your respect. You're not up to scratch. You can't be trusted. You cannot be trusted.
You and your very harsh generalizations. Okay, but Arteta fits the bill now, because he's below 55 years, and you have a rule that if a manager is above 55 years, he should be sacked.
More country, 55 years, a proper coach. do you know how behind this signing I am? You will not, if I tell you how you, I feel like I need to not put myself out there too much. So that if it goes down,
that on a scale on a scale from Moamali to who's the most pessimistic Ateta person? Because Moamali seems to have broken all the chains with the Ateta signing, really.
No, Moamali is too much. I can't. When I read Moamali's tweet, I'm like, Mo, chill. Moamali has like 100 pictures of Ateta in his gallery. In the morning is a different one. It's a different one. No. So the thing is, I wanted a coach. I've gotten a coach, and I wanted a young coach. I've always wanted a young dynamic coach. I want somebody that is not afraid yet. He's not afraid to try new things. I mean, did you read that nonsense about Thiago Motta and whatever club is coaching, saying that he wants to try a, what do you call it, 2-7-1 formation?
Who said that?
Thiago Motta, formerly of Inter, Barca. I can't call what club he's playing for. He's not a coach.
No, really?
Yeah. You know who I'm talking about. You know Thiago
Motta? I know him. No, I'm not just read right. the red. I've not read it.
2-7-1 formation.
Oh, actually, like, I just typed. Wait. I just typed on Google, like on my URL, whatever. I just typed Thiago Motta, and then the first thing that came up was Thiago Motta 272.
That kind of content I like to read. You want to play with 272. I'm interested in that kind of formation. But apparently, he wasn't looking at the pitch the way they would normally draw a football formation. He wasn't looking at it vertically. He was looking at it horizontally. So
I'm actually looking at a picture of the formation now.
Yeah, so
okay, so in a brilliant interview last year, the Italian says he wants to revolutionize the game by using a short team who control the game with high pressure and a lot of movement with and without the ball. My idea is to play offensively, a short team that controls the game with high pressure. What's it saying? I want the player that has the ball to always have 3 or 4 solutions and 2 teammates close to help. The difficulty in football is often to do things simply, but to control the base, pass and get free. I don't like the numbers on the field because they trick you. You can be super offensive with 5-3-2 and defensive with 4-3-3.
Yes.
Blah, 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 blah.
What I'm saying, okay. Simon, that's the kind of content, that's the kind of people that I want to listen to. That's the kind of people that I want to read. You are innovative. You want to find a solution that will work. That's another thing. You know, in that small space, you already mentioned some of the problems that Arsenal has. You look at somebody in our midfield, and he has just one option. He passed to either his other central midfield colleague or one of his defenders. He never has the guy. You see Pepe on the ball, and he has no options. He has 3 players on him, and he has no passing options. How won't he lose the ball?
It's not even about how won't he lose the ball, because there's nobody attracting somebody away from him.
Yes. And the thing is that all of that comes with coaching. So that's the kind of and I'm sure Motta is not 40 yet. That is the reason why I like young coaches. Sometimes it will not work, and we appreciate the fact that it did not work. But I want to see somebody that wants to come up with innovative techniques like that. Like, if you read some of Guardiola's notes that get released by maybe one of his old teammates or one of his old coaches, when you think of, he says people think that he likes possession. Pep Guardiola says, no, I don't like possession. Possession is just the only way I know how to do what I'm trying to do, which is pass the ball around until I have an overload somewhere. Do you think Unai Emery was thinking of overload anyway? Overload. What is overload? Pass the ball around until I can switch it to somebody that has space on the other side. Since that's all my possession is about. If I can get there in 2 passes, I won't take 10 passes to do it. But that because you need to drop people out of position with your passing so that you can create that overload is why he does it. But, you know, that's the kind of content that I want to read. Not, I don't want to listen to Raul tell us that we're going to be one of the best Champions League in 3 years. We have a plan.
Probably it's a different type. It's a different type of content.
I agree. But I'm not interested in that. I'm not interested in that route.
Okay, great. Let's talk about Arteta. Arteta now. Everybody knows about Arteta anyways. But because you keep going on about you want him to play in a particular way, I think if you want to put a percentage to how much a football coach can improve a certain group of players, for him to be able to implement whatever he wants to do, he's going to need a talent that's available to execute that. One of the problems that we had with Unai Emery was he wanted to play in a certain way that the personnel he had were not good enough to do it. And it didn't just work. Like, you want Peter Cech to pass from the back, it's not going to work. These people don't thrive under pressure. So if Arteta comes in and wants to play in a particular way, and then the players cannot, not because they don't want to do it, but they just don't have the skill set to do it, then that becomes a problem. How much does he have to compromise his own ideas to try and get us to win football matches, which he says he wants to do instantly?
Okay, so the thing is that if there's anything that I hope that he's picked up a lot from Guardiola. I hope he's picked up a lot from Guardiola in terms of, you know, positive, being aggressive, being proactive. I hope he's picked up a lot of. But if there's one thing that I hope that he did not pick up is Pep Guardiola's out and out arrogance. Pep does this thing where, you know, I don't think that in all the years I watched Pep coach football, I don't think Pep has always had a plan B. He wins about maybe 70, 75, 80% of his matches, right? But you see, on that day when it's not going well, when that plan A is not working, when he goes back and it doesn't work and he loses the game, right? I feel like when Guardiola goes back to the dressing room, to the drawing board, he looks at that plan A and say, how can I make you better? He doesn't say, you know what, maybe I need to come up with a plan B that I will use on the off day that this plan A doesn't work. And that is just some level of arrogance that only people like that, you know, Pep Guardiola has. And I hope that I did not imbibe that, because if you have Socrates, there's a limit to how much you can play us on the back. There is a limit. I mean, no matter how much of a good coach you are, if the guy is bad under pressure, he's bad under pressure.
I think you just see with the way Pep handled, what's that goalkeeper he met, Joe Hart, right? He didn't even just give him a chance and just said, this guy can play out at the back, he's out.
No point. I remember watching a game maybe 3 seasons ago, the season before Pep first won the league in England. He was playing Leicester, and he was having, I think, Zabaleta and Kolarov do this madness where, watch City, when they play these days, where they, in possession, he was having his fullbacks drop into midfield, fullbacks drop into holding midfield. Then out of possession, he was having them go to the flanks. You could tell that at some time, Zabaleta went to go meet him and he made that gesture like, I don't understand this thing you're telling me to do. It was just beyond the poor man's mental capacity. So that's why I feel like that's part of the reason why he went to go and revamp all of his fullbacks. But Mendy, but Walker, but Danilo, but Cancelo. He just figured that, you know, all of this Kolarov, all of these cliches, Zabaleta, he could not comprehend. It's like saying that you want to run a script on an ancient device, a modern software script on it. It just doesn't work. It didn't have the capacity to execute the instruction. And I'm hoping that Arteta goes slowly. Like, let's do the best of what we currently have. Then maybe in summer you can say, you know what, you need to get rid of this center back that cannot play ball, and buy me some younger guys. I mean, they might not be there yet. They will still make some defensive errors, but I want guys that are better on the ball. You get what I mean? Not that you just come and say, okay, I want to play this way. All of you must play this way, regardless of whether or not you have the mental capacity or you have the skill set to execute it. I'm hoping he doesn't do that. I'm hoping he looks at what he wants to do, look at what we currently have, and finds a balance. Like, he finds a balance. Yes. And then
correct it in the transfer window.
Correct it as much as he can in the transfer window. I mean, I don't think all of the problems with our playing styles can be corrected in one transfer window. So correct as much as you can in one transfer window. Maybe the next one, correct another one, up until you get to, you know, a fairly high level of personnel that can, you know, almost
entirely execute the game plan that you have in your head.
Okay, what I'm going to do now is, if our goal, right, is to be in the Champions League next season, right? That's the goal. That's the objective. We want to be in the Champions League next season. I'm going to call all the Arsenal players. You have a choice, pick or stay. If you could just keep them or sack them.
Let me refer back to something. Do you remember the hangout we had at the end of the season, last season?
Yeah,
pick or stay, pick or go.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah.
Do you remember when the picture of Emery came up, and I think I was the only one that said go?
Yeah, you're the only one that said go. Yeah.
So I mean, I'm ahead of the rest of. Okay, please go on.
Okay, let's go. goalkeepers. I'm on Arsenal.com now. So goalkeepers, I don't think there's much to do here. Ben Leno is keep, obviously. Okay. And so let me just. No, there's no need to go to Emi Martinez. There's no point. Let's just leave it. So, goalkeepers, keeping that. Emi Martinez, obviously, keep, right?
Keep, yeah.
Oh, okay, good. No, McMacy, actually, not...
No. Emi Martinez, sell. How old is he?
He's old, so he means to be... He's like... you're going to make...
No, but that, I know he keeps saying that nonsense about wanting to be first choice, blah, 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 blah. Blah, 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 blah. Please. The world is, we're getting to the point where people don't keep second choice goalkeepers that want to be first choice anymore. Think of it. How many second choice goalkeepers in the league can you name?
Simon, Martinez is 27 years. This is wrong. Young? It's correct. He's 27. He's young.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. So, for a goalkeeper. Okay. He's not that young, but he's okay. He's not that bad. Yeah. Okay.
For a goalkeeper, he has like 8 years left in him.
Yeah.
But if he keeps saying that thing that he wants to be first choice one day, blah, 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 it should just be going. Nobody needs that drama. He's not good enough to be first choice. So let him just be going.
Okay. So go for you.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. For me, it's keep. Okay. Matt Macy, we don't know enough about him. I think it's unfair if you want to make a judgment on keep or stay.
Exactly.
Yeah, so we'll just put him under keep. All right.
We'll keep him under. We don't know. We're going to keep what? I don't know.
It's keep or go. It's keep or go. Okay, so defenders, Hector Bellerin. We don't have enough time. Just say keep or go.
I swear, go. Because he's so let me tell you why, because I feel like this is very controversial. He's so marketable, and I don't think he's good, but I don't think he's as good as people make him out to be.
Yeah, that's a point. But he's our next captain. Like, you don't want to sell our next captain before we make him captain, right?
Well, if anybody comes with 60 million, someone sell him. If we have enough money, if we have enough money, let him go. Next.
No, that's not okay. Let's not go from that point in the conversation. The point is, let's look at it from let's just be clear. The focus of this analysis or this conversation is this player good enough to be at Arsenal? Forget marketability, anything.
Keep Bellerin.
Keep. Okay, yes. Good. Kieran Tierney.
Keep.
Socrates Papastathopoulos.
Sell.
Rob Holding.
Keep.
Skodran Mustafi. We have to finish this podcast. It's almost midnight where I have answer.
Mustafi, sell. You have finished this company.
Okay, David Lewis.
Oh, sell.
Callum Chambers.
Sell, because I don't think we should keep both Holding and Callum Chambers.
Okay. Konstantinos Mavropanos.
Keep. I've not seen enough from him, but keep.
Okay. Sell Kolasinac. Sell Kolasinac. Sell. Okay. Dani Ceballos, keep him or send him back to Madrid?
Kolasinac, keep.
Kolasinac, keep?
Come on. How many backup left back that we're going to find? As long as it's not our first choice, I'll keep him. As long as it's not our first choice.
Okay. So I moved him to keep for you. Okay. So Ceballos.
Return immediately. Okay. Return in January.
The elephant in the room, Mr. Ozil.
Keep.
Okay. Lucas Torreira.
Lucas Torreira, sell. I don't really think Torreira wants to be here. Yes, I like him, but I don't think he wants to be here. Okay. I don't think he wants to be here. Sell.
Ainsley Maitland-Niles. He's actually categorized as a midfielder on the site.
Ainsley Maitland-Niles. Keep.
Okay. Joe Willock.
Keep.
Matteo Guendouzi.
Keep.
Okay. Yes. Emil Smith-Rowe.
Keep.
Granit Xhaka.
Sell.
Alex Lacazette.
You said I should not think of, you know, we can buy a better player that fits our profile, blah, blah, blah. Keep or sell. Just like that.
For these ones, maybe we should make the exception. Okay, let's just go. Let's be fair to everybody else. Keep or sell. No context. Just, is he good enough to be at Arsenal if he wants to be in the Champions League next season? That's the criteria.
Yes, keep.
Keep.
I'll sell him. Okay.
Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang.
But ultimately, I think we should only keep one of them and sell the other. But Aubameyang, keep.
Nicolas Pepe?
Keep.
Luis Nelson?
Sell.
Wow.
But the fear is that... So the thing is, I've never seen anything. That, apart from when he was in Oppenheimer, and we used to see him score those wonder goals at the beginning of his stint. Mm. I've never seen enough from him. I think I've seen more from Emile Smith-Rowe than I've seen from Reece Nelson, and I do not know why. And people seem to have a very exaggerated opinion about him. But, okay, you know what? Keep, just on the off chance that he gets good coaching and he becomes the next Gnabry, and people won't let us rest. So keep.
Okay, keep. The last one, Gabriel Martinelli, there's no point to have this discussion. Keep.
Keep.
Okay, so let me see what you've got. It doesn't look bad on paper. You have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. You're keeping 17 players and you're letting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 8 go. What does that say about the squad?
I've never thought the squad is as bad as it is. I just think they've been rudderless for a while. I feel like they're like a ship without captain. Everybody just does what they do in isolation. No, there's no synchronization. They don't play as a team. So I feel like by the time, hopefully, Ateta can coach them properly, and then we can do this again at the end of season and see the guys that their problem isn't bad coaching. They are just not, you know, they're just not good enough.
Okay. All right, good. As we start to round up on the podcast, what's your expectation for this season from Ateta? Like, what do you expect to see? Champions? You still think we can... I think privately you told me you think we can still qualify for the Champions League, right?
I think so. Because...
You think so? Raul thinks so as well. Raul says... another reason why you should listen to the Raul interview. He says... The guy interviewing him said... we're halfway into the season. Then Raul stopped him and says, no, we're not halfway into the season yet. I think this season can be rescued. Then Raul went into a long conversation as to how he thinks we can still rescue this season. But you can go on. Everybody go watch that interview. Don't listen to anything Mastermind says. Go and watch it.
I don't think we would end up qualifying. It's not that big. But I think like we still have enough to challenge for it. Because if you think of it, Tottenham was in, 15th, 16th? They won... or three games, and they're in fifth or sixth now. And because these guys are just so inconsistent, Chelsea, Tottenham, United. And I mean, I've not gotten to the point yet where I want to start considering that maybe we're in a proper battle with Wolves and Sheffield. I don't think we're there yet. I don't think I'm ready to consider that possibility yet. Yeah, but I mean, as a last time I checked, I didn't check up before this Chelsea win, but I think there are 9 points, if I'm correct. They are so inconsistent. Nine points is not insurmountable. It's not something that you cannot get past. I mean, if you were 9 points behind Guardiola or Pep in their current iterations, you cannot catch them. But 9 points behind, Chelsea beat Tottenham today. They could go, I don't know who their next game is. They could play at home to, I mean, I heard that they lost their last two games, two of the last three defeats were to bottom six opposition. Yeah, so if you are that inconsistent, you always leave the door open. The other person will always have a chance. So I still don't think we'll get there because I feel like we left it too late. But I feel like we can have to properly contend for the Champions League places. At least finish. I don't think under any condition that we should finish behind out of the Europa League places for any reason.
How long have I known you, right? I can't.
We watched 2013 FA Cup final together. So that's at least 6 years.
I've never heard you this positive in my life.
You've never had it. Since in those 6 years, this is the first time we're having a football coach. Forget that nonsense that Arsene Wenger was doing.
I'm going to delete you from this podcast very soon. Anyways, let's just close. All right, so wait, something happened in the game. AFTV. Yeah. So what? Let's just comment on AFTV. What do you think? Just to close in that manner, the whole conversations around AFTV. Do you have any thoughts on it?
No, I don't. I make a conscious decision not to follow anything that AFTV does. I've never watched an AFTV video. Never. I don't know what they do. I know people talk about them a lot, but it's like white noise to me. I don't know what people are talking about. So whatever incident you are referring to, I'm not aware of it. I don't even think I want to know. It's important. What happened? You won't tell me.
Okay. I don't know how to start. I didn't expect that answer, so I don't even know how to come back to you with that. I don't think to not watch any of the videos is, I don't watch it as well, but I can't say that I don't see a few of the things that come on social media. And then yesterday, after what happened, I made a conscious effort to actually go and watch Robbie's response to the whole thing. And a lot of people are angry at AFTV, right? And that there's just cause for it. In my opinion, there's just cause for it. So I personally, I have ideological differences with some of what they do. I think, so if this conversation is now hard to have with you because you don't even watch it and you don't pay attention to them. So it's hard. So it's more like me just talking. But this is my take.
They're just saying blood. This is terrible blood. It was just saying blood. That's the only AFTV video I think I've ever watched. I don't follow them.
Oh, okay. So this is just my take on it because I think AFTV as a concept, right, is great. I think they occupy a very special niche in Arsenal content creation. If you wanted to listen to this podcast, you listen to Arsenal Vision, you listen to Beckham Wonderland, you listen to Ars Blog, you might stumble on this one and listen to it. There's lots of Arsenal podcasts to listen to. If you wanted to read Arsenal blogs, there are a lot. I think we have the highest number of bloggers, even though blogging is pretty much dying now, but there's a lot of blog content for you to read. If you wanted to watch Arsenal on YouTube, there are great Arsenal YouTube channels as well, but you don't even know them, but they put out really great content. And most of these podcasts also run YouTube channels, but AFTV occupies a special niche because they've over time been able to capture a fan's experience right from when they experience watching Arsenal. So it's a special place that they occupy in Arsenal content creation. That's the way I see it. And then I think that because they occupy that special place, right, they reach a large number of people who immediately, once they experience Arsenal from home, wherever they are, can connect to what somebody who has watched Arsenal live is communicating. That's the space that they occupy. And I think it's a special niche. And I think that's why what they do is important. However, this is where I have ideological differences with them. And when I had like private conversations with Kelechi on this subject as well. And even when he came into Nigeria, before he came in and when he came in and we met, basically, we talked about it as well. This is where I have ideological differences with them. And it's something that mirrors from society as well. The same way, if you can't abuse someone for having an opinion that differs from your own. And that's where I struggle with social media. To be honest, if it wasn't, I've gotten to the point where if I wasn't running Canon Crested, I wouldn't be on Twitter much. I'm more an Instagram person. Instagram is a happy place. I'm not young. I'm middle aged. I work. I'm 35, 36. I'm 36, right? And then I have two kids. I have a real job that I'm doing.
Just too much drama going on Twitter for you, Abi.
It's just too much drama for me, you know. So I go to Instagram. It's a happy place. I just want to be happy. You know, that kind of thing. I'm going to the stage of my life where I just want to be happy. But Twitter is now a place where if you want to pass a message across. Like somebody wants to pass a message across, paragraph one. You've seen what Mourinho has done now. He's lost again. The foolish people who thought that. Why did you have to add that part where you said foolish people who thought that he could have done anything at Arsenal? It's not necessary. You can actually say that same thing and say like the people who thought he could have done anything at Arsenal. Maybe I'm just too old for the medium. I'm beginning to reach that conclusion because I don't get why. You have to be abusive.
I think it's rude. I think it's rude. I think it's a bit childish for you to call somebody foolish or stupid or idiot because they don't agree.
I don't agree with you. I think it's completely, it has no place in society. If you see someone face to face, right? If you're standing in front of me and we're having a conversation and we're not friends, we're just people having a conversation and we have differing opinions, you won't call me foolish.
I agree.
So why would you
my football opinion?
Yeah, exactly. You wouldn't call me foolish. You wouldn't call me an idiot. You wouldn't call me deluded. But we come on social media and we call people names.
So who called? The guy from EFTV, did they call some people names or they were called names?
Okay, so I'm not even going. So yesterday. There were fans on the ground that were singing, "We want AFTV out, we want AFTV out." I like during the football game, Arsenal fans were singing that AFTV get out of my club. It's gotten that bad. Do you understand?
But you know that
what did you say?
The problem is that all of that just gives them more clout.
It does. It does, but it doesn't take away from the fact that the underbelly of all of this is the fact that a lot of people go to AFTV to speak. A lot of people go to AFTV to speak, right? Much of that content is not abusive, but the one that gets spoken about the most are the ones where people use language that you could have said in a better way, like, and that's where Robbie, my own ideological difference with him comes. It's like, if somebody says on my platform and then says, Xhaka is a cunt, do you understand?
I can instantly
correct you. It doesn't take anything away from him to say, no, you can't say that.
My question is that, do you think AFTV has gotten commercial? Do you think their followership, their readership, do you think they've commercialized it?
I don't even think there's anything wrong with commercializing it. I don't even think there's anything wrong. He puts in work, he should earn money. I don't think that there's anything wrong with it.
So that's the function between you and them. So guys are where you blow Canon Crested to, I don't think you ever actually properly look at it as a source of income, right?
And that's because I have like a full-time job that I'm focused on. Do you understand? So even if it was my source of income, right.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't mean that it's like you have an organization that doesn't have principles, right? The fact that you run an organization and there are no principles behind it, there's a problem there. So, yes, I think the platform is good. Yes, I think it occupies a special niche with Arsenal content creation. Yes, I think all fans should have an opinion, but it's going to actually take 1 second of his time. And if he does it once, that's all he has to do. So I don't want to talk about Asblog a lot, but if you go to Asblog, he's very critical of Wenger when the last 2 years of Wenger when he was living. very critical of Unai Emery, right? But if you go to his blog and you write, Unai Emery is a cunt, he would delete you and block you from ever making a comment from his website. But if you go there and say, because he wants to ensure that you respect the person that you're criticizing. And in today's society, if I differ with you, it doesn't mean that I hate you. And I shouldn't use language that should demean you because I differ with you. I have a difference of opinion with you.
I totally agree with you on that. No matter how much I disagree with you on something on a platform like AFTV or Twitter or Instagram, I think that somebody calling somebody a cunt says more about you than about anything else that you're talking about.
100%. And I think that's a good place. That's my take on it as well. Anyways, so it was good talking to you. When I tweeted, this is 1 hour 20 minutes. Anybody who listened to this podcast till the end, wow, I can only say thank you. I really appreciate the effort that you've made to listen to us.
You said you didn't know what we were going to talk about for 1 hour.
Exactly. And I didn't get to call Ifreke as well. I was supposed to call Ifreke into this. I apologize, Ifreke. I promise you'll be on the next pod. I sincerely apologize. It's really late now. We're recording. It's almost midnight where I am. And I can't. It's disrespectful to just call you at this time. So, wow. We've spoken for this long. Anyways, so thank you for making out time to come on the pod. As always, Mastermind 1808 with your very, very... very, very far right. If there was anything like far right in football, you're far right with your opinions. Your very far right opinions.
First day I get to London, I'm going to go and for Pedro of Lea Grove. We need to record something together. I feel like it's the only person I know that thinks exactly the same way I think. Like, have are you discontent that I'm like, thank you very much.
I don't know how we can be so differing and then we still have conversations. It's okay. Yeah, sure. I'm happy to have you always. Yeah, thanks. Have a good Merry Christmas
to your darling viewers. Thank you for listening to us.
Yeah, thank you for hanging out with us. Yeah, cheers. Merry Christmas to everybody. I hope you have a very, very wonderful Christmas. We would most likely record a podcast after Bournemouth, but I can't promise anything. There's just too much happening in everybody's lives right now. So, anyways, have fun. Cheers. Bye bye. Thank you, Damola. Bye.